This.
What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mass.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
I just want to see what the fuss is about.
The Sports Hub.
But I'll probably hate it.
And I still want more information on that fantasy camp. I'm just curious about it now. So I heard, so Brady and Gronkowski are back in Foxborough in advance of mini camp tomorrow. I guess the players are also required to be at this fantasy camp today, which is just, when I first heard about it, I thought it was a charity event. I thought it was like
Make-A-Wish.
Sort of a Make-A-Wish thing, you know, underprivileged or sick kids come in and play football with the guys for a little bit, which, you know, nice story. But it's not. Apparently it's not. It's a buy-in fantasy camp. If you want to play catch with Tom Brady, you pay how much? Now, can we find out how much it costs? Can we find out? And I'm just, and they do plenty of fantasy stuff too. I don't mean to dump on them. I'm now just curious. Because I do, on the face of it, find it kind of gross. Like, I don't know. You know, buy your way into Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. Like, I don't know. How much is daddy paying so the kid can play catch with Gronk? Just, I don't know. Maybe it's in the mood I'm in. I just want to, let's get some numbers.
Camp thing happens with every team, right?
Does it?
Well, I mean, I like the Red Sox.
Red Sox do a fantasy cap every spring training.
Where you get to go and, like, you know, you live in the clubhouse, you spend a week down there, you play games, and there's old timers there.
Yeah, no, with like Lou Maloney and Jim Rice.
Right.
Do they do it with the current players? And are the current players required to do it?
Oh, good question. I don't know.
You know, this is these guys coming in the day before. This is Brady and Gronk. This isn't Gino Cappelletti, you know,
John Hannah,
love you, mean it, right? Yeah. No, it's this is these are the guys.
So no, you get to line up and get run over by John Hannah. Welcome to Patriots Fantasy Camp.
What's the number? What's the buy-in? What does Daddy got to pitch in to get Junior to play catch with Tom Brady today? What's that number? I want to know. I want to know what the number is. I'm just curious. And they do plenty of charity stuff. I'm not telling you they're not charitable or anything like that. I just want to know about this day because I'm now curious about it.
So is this a requirement that every player has to show for this?
Someone had said that. Yeah, somebody mentioned that. I think Zoe mentioned it. Yeah. Zoe, what's the buy-in? I know Zoe's listening. How much does it cost, Zoe? What does Daddy got to pay for the kid to play catch with Tom Brady today? Back to your phones on everything, okay? NBA Finals, Red Sox, Patriots stuff. Here's Greg in the car on the Sox. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, how you guys doing today? Thanks for taking my call. Tony had talked about the Red Sox base running, and I drive and I listen to the games. I never get to see one. So yesterday I saw one on ESPN, and I saw the great Mitch Ricky Henderson Moreland, for one, trying to stretch a single into a double, and he was out by, I don't know, 20 feet, it seemed. And then Xander Bogaerts doesn't understand the, I don't know, how to tag up and move to third, where he got thrown out by 20 feet, too. I mean, I understand being aggressive, but guys, you didn't have to be from the booth to see that both of them were dead meat.
Okay, Sox base running, Maz. It hasn't moved one inch, has it?
No, still an issue. Absolutely still an issue. And the Bogaerts play is one of the worst ones you will ever, ever see. I mean, it was atrocious. Again, ball hit deep to center. He played it halfway. After the ball was caught, he realized he was, you know, copping his pants down, so he ran back and tried to tag up, and he was thrown out by 20 feet. I mean, it was brutal. Absolutely, positively brutal. They suck on the bases still.
We've got Mike and Needham on the Red Sox. Hi, Mike. Michael. Okay, babe, you can call us back. You know the number. Mike in Rockport has something for us. What is it, Mike?
Murray, how much weed have you given Maz today? Did I just hear him say he wouldn't trade LeBron for Kyrie?
He said that earlier.
I've given him none, but no, this is his take. Yes, he's dug in.
Wow, that's amazing, Maz.
Why is that so crazy to you?
You wouldn't, LeBron's the best player in the world, you wouldn't trade him for Kyrie?
No, not with this group right now because of the age. I said because of the age, Mike.
Oh, because of the age, right. Right, because Kyrie's knees are so good. He's missed over a season and a half in 7 years, but LeBron's never missed a full season or anything. But no, you know, you're right. So listen, Maz, I've been listening to you for over a month talk about how petty Tom Brady is for, you know, I don't know, being mad that the coach made the worst decision in the world and cost him a sixth championship.
That's not why he's mad, but go ahead.
Sure. No, that's a big part of it, I'm sure.
It's a part of it.
And Belichick definitely deserves what he's getting right now. He deserved him missing OTAs for this to make him look bad. But why haven't you mentioned anything about Kyrie Irving skipping the seventh game to go to the finals? Because he's a petty little bitch, and he didn't want to be there while LeBron went to the finals if we lost.
So I'm not sure that's why, but there is no good reason why. We have spent time on
it. Yeah, we did. We spent time on it last week.
I hated it.
So did I.
I don't care whether it's because he doesn't want to be there to watch LeBron win, or he had to get a nose job for his press junket for his movie opening, or he just decided to schedule it then when he could have scheduled it the week before or the week after. There is no good reason. There's no good reason for him not to be on the bench there.
Yeah, I didn't like it either.
You know, the whole team falls apart in the fourth quarter. And, I mean, anything he could have offered there would have helped. And he was there previously, yet you get to the most important game and the most important moment, and he's off getting a nose job to go on his movie tour or something. Like, what? I hated it.
I didn't like it either. I don't know where this guy gets all his information, but we did talk about it. So I didn't love it either. No, again, do I think it's the end of the world? No. And at least he was at a lot of the other ones. Brady's absences are consistent and numerous. So let's not compare the two.
Nick in Boston. Go ahead, please.
All right. So, hey, guys, what's going on?
How you doing?
Good. So all this stuff is obvious. I mean, everyone is sick of Brady missing in passing camps. And I know you guys just talk a lot about, you know, you guys are just sick of him not being there. It's disrespectful to the coach, and he has never done it in his whole career. But a lot of things have changed, you know, even from last year just to this year. So, I mean, I guess my question is, would you rather him be there when he doesn't want to be there, you know, going with all the dynamics of
yes.
what's going on in the clubhouse? You'd rather him?
Yep. Would. I'd rather him be there grinding it out. Yep, you bet. And working with the young guys and doing as best you can. Yep, absolutely.
See, what I would rather have is for him to want to be there.
But you know what? I don't need him and Bill to like each other. So that's fine.
But that's not even part of it.
I mean, I don't mean it's fine, but it's just that is what it is. He can not even talk to Bill, but show up and work with the young kids and work with the coaches and just put in everything that he's put in the last couple of years. He doesn't have to talk to Bill to do that.
Yeah, I just would want him to have enough respect for the football to do it.
Right, exactly.
That's why I say, you know, to me, I would want him to want to be there. That he would look at it and say, no, it's important to the team. That's why I'm there. Whether he likes Belichick or not is irrelevant to me.
I still can't believe he's not there. I told you he was going to show up, and I was wrong. But that was my prediction because I thought he'd wake up in the morning and look at himself in the mirror and give in like he's always given in. Like, there's football practice. What am I doing?
See, the fact
I got to go. And I can't believe that voice, his inner voice, did not compel him to go to the stadium and work out with the team. I'm stunned.
The fact that he would put his own personal issues ahead of it. And I say again, personal issues, assuming that they are all just sort of standard issues that everyone deals with on a routine basis. But the fact that he would put those, whether it's him being pissed at Belichick or more family time, because I think that one's a crock, sorry. But the fact that he would just blow football out of the equation altogether, to me, is a bad sign.
Quickly, John in the truck, you got something for me on the fantasy camp?
I do. I went to that last year. I was working for a company that actually was like one of the sponsors for the Patriots, so I got to go, and it's about $5,500.
That's it?
Per head.
That's nothing. I mean, I don't mean that's nothing. That's not what I was expecting. So $5,500, and you can play catch with Tom Brady.
Yep. You spend the whole day. You go through the stadium. You have lunch with them. You kind of do drills, you know, meet and greets, autographs, the whole nine.
And that's open to anyone who wants to do it or just sponsors?
Usually it's more for sponsors. I don't know of anyone that would.
There's a registration form online for it.
Okay. Thanks, John. So it's for anybody?
Yeah. You can go online. I Googled it and found that it was $5,000 per individual. Maybe his is a little bit more. And it's $15,000 for a group of four.
Oh, you get to save $5,000, and here's what you get to expect. Access to meet and practice with the Patriots team, interaction with Patriots players and coaches at each positional skill station, special appearances by Patriots chairman and CEO Robert Kraft and head coach Bill Belichick, behind-the-scenes tours of Patriots training facilities, interactive station with charitable partners, presentations from football staff, including strength and conditioning coaches, will Alex be there, trainers, dietitian and nutritionist, player personnel, and more. There you go.
I thought those numbers would be much higher.
Yeah, I thought it'd be like $20,000 ahead.
Oh, I thought, whatever. I mean, I didn't know what to expect. I wasn't expecting $5,000.
No, that's about the number I would have guessed.
Really?
Somewhere in there. For one day? $5,000? That's not cheap.
The word is that Brady won't show up unless he makes $500, like a personal appearance.
Yeah, but maybe Brady's not making anything.
So, like, this is weird, too. The players are compelled to do it in their player contracts? Is that part of, like, a standard player contract in New England? You got to show up for this for Cocta Fantasy Day?
I mean, this feels like an organization thing, right? This is not a... I mean, I bet you Belichick doesn't want to do it.
Oh, you think?
So,
no, He doesn't want to hop, schmooze with the paying public.
So this one is mandated by ownership, I'm sure.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's got to be in your contract.
So I get it. So when the owner says show up, Tom comes. But when Bill wants him there for OTAs, it's see you later.
I'm trying to piece something together here. Maybe this will all wrap into some sort of take. But, like, I don't know. He's here for this, but not, like, working with his teammates who just got here?
I bet you the owner can't even compel them to come to this. Like, you can you make this mandatory? But he probably says the owner, you know, they probably say it as, you know, Robert would like your presence, and they all go. So it's one of those things where the players say to one another, no, we got to be there for this one.
But if I were the players union, I'm like, well, you're making money off of this. I mean, I don't know how many people they draw. $5,000 a head. How many people are, you know, were involved in it? How many people were there? Just do the math. Wouldn't the players ask for a cut? Wouldn't you if you were an agent or if you were the union?
Yeah,
there's
probably something in the contract though that says they are, you know, they are expected to cooperate with the team on certain events.
All right, so
can we go as a show next year and write it off as research?
Oh, I love that.
So idea. Cost us $20,000. Boom, us
15.
Four.
Oh, go four
five,
of us.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, it's 4 for $15.
Yeah,
we can even pitch it as a bargain. It's save five G's.
Let's go.
Oh, I'm in.
Jimmy, print out that registration form, all right?
Except I just make sure I don't get anywhere near Gostkowski. Because I think that guy would kick me right in the head.
Okay. The Red Sox pull out the last two games in Houston. They split against the Astros. They lose the first two games in Houston. They're down 3-1 in the seventh inning of game three. About to lose 3 out of 4 at least. Maybe get their ass swept. They pull themselves off the mat. They win game three. They win last night. They split. They go toe-to-toe with the best team in baseball. And guess who's not impressed? I'll give you one guess and give you the answer right after this.
Felger and Mez. The Sports Hub. Felger and Mez.
I love it.
You were right, Mez.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
1-1 to Jose Altuve, sent out to center field, and that should be the final piece of business tonight as Andrew Benintendi makes the play. And that does it. Oh, that was Blake Swihart that made the catch. We've been sitting out here in the outfield all day, and I still don't get the angles. Final score tonight, Red Sox beat the Astros 9-3.
All right, Maz, I set it up before. The Red Sox show you anything this weekend?
A little.
Just a little.
Just a little. What more do you want me to tell you? They played 4 games. They won 2. Is that a win?
Again, they lost the first two. They've gotten their ass kicked by this team for a couple of years running. They're down in game 3-1 in the seventh inning. At that point, if I'd said to you they split this 2-2, would you have gone, eh, they didn't really show me anything?
Yeah, at that point, yeah. No, at that point, I'd have been happy, yeah.
At that point, you'd say, yes, I take a 2-2. That would be a good showing.
I just assumed you were going to ask me a question in the other direction.
No. So that's what they did. They were down 3-1 in the seventh inning of game 3, about to get swept, or at least you'll lose the first 3, and they come back and split that series. That's pretty good. Let me ask you this.
Okay, but again, what if I asked you going in and said they're going to split? What would you say?
I said, but that shows me something, that they go toe-to-toe with the best team in the league that's kicked their ass for the last 2 years?
Okay, see, I don't feel that way.
Let me ask you, the Red Sox of last year or the year before, did they pull off that split?
2 years ago, definitely not. Last year, maybe. Last year, maybe. I mean, again, they won game 3 last year against the Astros. They kicked their ass, and they almost had game 4. But to me, this isn't about... I look at it this way. Houston has won. Houston, they have rings now. That team's been validated. They may never win again. I have no idea. All I know is right now they are the reigning world champions. So they weren't looking at it as the Red Sox coming into town and, boy, we got to put them in their place. The Red Sox went down to Houston saying, we have a chance to play the world champs who kicked our ass, and we have a chance to make a statement. And the best analogy I can give you is that after the Red Sox blew the LCS in 03, I distinctly remember them in 04 playing the Yankees. They took 3 out of 4 at Fenway Park, and then they went to New York, and they swept them. 3 games, swept them, leaving no doubt, nope, we're coming for you again. No doubt. And I look at this Red Sox team and say, maybe they're coming for them. Maybe they're not. Maybe they're the same team. I didn't really...
Maybe they're not just going to turtle like they have in the past.
Okay, but again, I didn't come out of it feeling all that different about the team than I did going in. I really didn't. And so I look at...
Even if they were able to get those last couple of games without arguably the MVP of the league in Mookie Betts?
So Saturday in particular, I give them points for. Saturday is the biggest win of the year, if you ask me.
So we got mass points on that.
Yeah, they get mass points.
Okay,
on that.
Good. That's those are rare. Those are hard to get.
Yeah, Saturday was a real win. Last night a little bit less so. But again,
last night no mass points last night, folks.
A little bit less last night. Little bit. But Saturday was legit. Saturday was a legit win. That's a good victory. But when you ask the question the way you ask it, if I had asked you after they lost the first two, well, fine.
Yeah, well,
you throw the first two losses right out the window.
You just have to reset at that point.
No, you don't.
Yes, you do.
I judge the whole four games in aggregate.
If you had told me the Celtics-Cavs series would go seven, I would tell you that doesn't mean the Celts choke. Once I watch the game and watch what happened in game seven, it's a choke. Yes, you reset after every moment. Yes.
Okay, I don't reset after every moment. I take the four games in aggregate. And Chris Sale went in there in the second game and lost. And so, and they were behind repeatedly in the first two games. And they were behind again in the third one, but they came back and won it. And
they showed some sack, Mass.
On Saturday, they did. Yeah, they showed some.
Okay, but it shows sack coming back in those final two games.
Yes, but they have shown sack from time to time over the last year plus. And they just can't really do it ultimately when it matters, and they can't do it consistently against good competition.
Okay, two sets of numbers here that I find interesting. First of all, the Red Sox have played the Yankees and Astros. They haven't played the Mariners or the Indians. I think I'm reading from Nick Cafardo. There's really like four contenders in the whole American League. I don't know if I'll throw the Angels in there as well. But Indians, Mariners, Yankees, Astros, and you. You haven't played the Mariners or the Indians, but you've played the Yankees and the Astros 10 times, and you're 5-5.
Correct.
I think that's okay. Like, yeah. I mean, it's by definition it's okay, but I mean, you've gone toe-to-toe with the big boys, and you've cleaned up on everybody else.
Right.
I think that's what you expect.
Yeah.
What do you want?
I would like a winning record against those teams. I'd like to have no doubt. Now, they went into New York, and the Yankees have played Houston and went 5-2. So, the Red Sox have played Houston and gone 2-2. Which one's better?
Well, 5-2.
Okay, so that's what I strive for. I want to see them make a statement that says, no. You have to take us seriously. 2-2 doesn't, it's not enough.
Okay, as it relates to
I wanted more. They're capable of more.
As it relates to the race the rest of the way, what's interesting is that the Yankees have been rained out now 7 times. The Yankees, who are, I think, 2 games ahead of you in the loss column.
They are going into today, correct.
Do you have like 5 games in hand on them?
I think it's six.
Unbelievable. But it's because the Yankees have been rained out 7 times and will have to play a lot of makeup games in the dead of summer. They've played only 54 games, 55 after today. They have 2 doubleheaders in June, including one today, again, which I just said. They also have to chop up all their off days to make up these rain dates, which is a killer for their pitching staff.
Absolutely. It's a huge break for the Red Sox.
Huge advantage to you.
Tremendous.
And there's a July 9th doubleheader, that Aaron Boone's trying to get changed because the Yankees have to play Sunday night ESPN the previous night. Now, I don't know if that July 9th is home or away. Does it really matter?
In fact, I think it's against the Red Sox.
So they have to play Sunday night and then play a doubleheader the next day against the Red Sox.
They play Sunday night against the Red Sox, Monday in Toronto.
Oh, I see. So, that's going to add up on their pitching staff. That's a big advantage for the Red Sox. Okay?
I take it back. It's not. It's Sunday at Toronto, Monday at Baltimore. I got that wrong.
Okay. Either way, that should be an advantage for you going forward. One more thing. You mentioned Chris Sale losing on Friday. And Murray gave us this stat before. A trend has developed in Chris Sale's year and a half in Boston. When he plays teams that are 500 or below, when he plays losing teams, he started 29 times against teams that are 500 or below. 29 starts, basically a full season. He's 17-4 with a 2.31 ERA. Dominant. When he plays teams that are above 500, he has only 18 starts, which, again, I think it just tells you the number of starts tells you the quality of play in the American League. It's just been garbage the last 2 years. Only 18 starts in the same amount of time against teams over 500. But in those 18 starts, 5-9, 4.58. Are you beginning to worry, Murray, since you gave us a stat, you begin to worry about Chris Sale as a big-game pitcher or pitcher against quality competition?
A little bit. I mean, I thought that performance on Friday was putrid. It's the first time since he's been a member of the Red Sox, too, that his earned run average is in the threes. So what is this? We've been concerned before about fatigue. Is it setting in a couple of months into the season? Like, this is the guy that I look at as the ace of this staff, and he should be. But as of right now, it feels like it's David Price, and that terrifies me, and it should you.
See, I think it might be the opposite. I don't think it's fatigue. I think that they've really managed his workload, and he's pitched fewer innings, or at least it feels like he has. He's not going 7 or 8 every time he's out there, and I wonder if he's not sharp because he's not getting the same reps he's usually gotten. In which case, It doesn't bother me. Now, the good teams thing is different. Like, it does feel like he dominates bad teams. The Yankees are a little deceiving because last year he pitched well against them early. They didn't score, and he lost those games the last time they smacked them around. But I do want, you know, and I include the playoff game. I'm sorry. It's hard to ignore that. I don't think it's wrong to look at Sale now and wonder if in the big moments against the good teams, he's going to be as good.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Every afternoon, Felger and Mass bring you the science of sports.
Stupid me.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Thank you, Coach.
By the way, I thought you guys were much better today. Good job.
Again, that's Steve Kerr at the end of his press conference. The laugh track. People laughing in the audience should be taken out back and slapped across the face with a moist sausage. That's what that punishment is reserved for. The media people that laugh. Do you hear that again, Jimmy? It's the end of Steve Kerr's press conference. You can play the whole thing just to set it up low. It's the very end of his press conference as he's getting up.
You know, just the scoring that he gave us off the bench and the defensive toughness and rebounding and everything. He's a guy who gets it. He understands how to play. Right.
Thank you, Coach.
By the way, I thought you guys were much better today. Good job.
Like, did you enhance that with laugh sound in there?
Nope, that's how I have it.
Oh, good. So, of course, he's playing off of LeBron James, who, after game one, after he was asked repeatedly to speak for J.R. Smith and wouldn't do it smartly, walked by a reporter, a group of reporters, and said, you're better than this, or be better next time, something like that. So that's what Steve Kerr was doing. He was tweaking LeBron with that comment, which I just think was such a dink move from Steve Kerr. I hated it.
Didn't bother me in the least.
And here, you can go first.
Okay, I just think, so he probably just said it as a joke. And the other thing is, like, you know, to me, LeBron is the one who acted like the dink on the way out the door. Totally. Like, you know, so LeBron loses the game and all of a sudden it's the media's fault?
LeBron is a dink.
Okay, so there you go.
Yes, well,
so we agree.
He's also a real factor in this. He's also doing something, as opposed to Steve Kerr, who is the modern-day version of Casey Jones, as far as I'm concerned. He's a coat rack. He is someone who turns on the lights for practice and turns them off when they're done. He is not a player in this drama. He is a non-factor, because Golden State could have Mike Brown coach or Luke Walton coach, and I've seen this, so I don't feel like I'm making this up. I've seen other bozos come in there and have just as much, if not more, success as Steve Kerr. He is a non-factor in this, where LeBron has literally taken an entire team and put them on his back and carried them and should have won game one and is actually a force in this thing. And so LeBron had a bad moment. He had a bad moment after a tough loss. And Kerr, who's a nobody in this thing, is going to needle him like that after a win? That's just being a bad winner. And it's just another reason for me to dislike Golden State. No degree of difficulty, fellas. None. You're all playing free and easy, no pressure in the world. You all just ganged up the year that the cap went up, and, you know, congratulations. But I thought it was a dink move by Steve Kerr. I'd have more respect if it was someone who was actually doing something, as opposed to him, who just stands there and claps on the sideline.
I just looked at it as an extension of the bad blood between these two teams, which you see on the floor, but this was just, I think, him needling LeBron a little bit. Either that, it's him trying to look cool to the reporters, which might even be worse. Like, oh, he made you feel bad, so here I am to make you feel better. The pool of you that are sitting right here. Like, that's ridiculous.
I just thought I was taking a shot at LeBron, which, I get. He's not a likable guy, and he was a dink to say that to the reporter coming off, but you just won. I mean, you're going to poke the bear? Like, the last time you poked him in the finals, he came back and beat you. So, like, it's not even smart on top of it. I don't know. That whole team's bugging the crap out of me. How's that? Maybe that's just a reflection of it. So there's that. And we got Red Sox, Astros, and we got Brady and Gronk reporting. We've got Robin Blackstone on that. Go ahead, Rob. What do you got?
Hey, you know, Tom Brady versus Father Time. Oh, and that, and when the guy called you saying you were smoking weed, he must have been smoking the weed. But anyways, what do you think he has to prove? Is he trying to prove he's broken every record? Is it against time now? Is it he's trying to prove that players can play and still achieve certain levels of greatness after?
You're saying what's the motivation for him?
Yeah, like, is it Father Time? Is it basically I'm 40, people are supposed to quit now, but look,
you know,
at me,
so,
you know?
I mean, at the core, he loves it, I think, although he might love it a little less. He may not love everything about it like he used to. He used to love the grind and the preparation and the teamwork and the buy-in and all of that. So I think he likes that a little less. But I hope he's still doing it because he loves it. I hope he's not doing it because it's the best launch for his brand. Like, if the whole thing's just being used to launch him into his next endeavor, then, I mean, that's fine. He's got the right to do it. But, like, I don't care about his next endeavor.
Okay, so what would your gut tell you?
That's a combination of it. But I think a big part of it, unfortunately, is business-related.
I mean, to me, that's definitely a big part of it. I don't think this is, like, what else would it be? I mean, I don't doubt that he's still a competitive guy. That'll never change.
There's a little bit of this. He talked so much crap during Garoppolo's time to beat off Garoppolo and to fend him off that now he's sort of stuck. It's like, yeah, no, man, I'm playing to 45. I'm playing to 45. I'm playing to 45. Oh, Garoppolo's gone? I guess I have to keep playing. You know, like, you just can't. He promised so many people that now he's got to do it. So maybe he feels obligated a little bit, which is not a good reason to keep playing either, by
no,
the way.
No, it's the wrong reason. You've got to do it purely for your own reasons, and that's it. So, I you know, again, at the end of the day, who the hell knows what's really going on in his head? But to me, the parallel with Garoppolo is impossible to ignore. Jimmy G's here. All of a sudden, he's the hardest working man in show business. Now Jimmy G's gone, and he's on a boat in Monaco. I mean, that's a coincidence?
It's a reentry Monday. Everything's on the table. Christian in Leominster is a Celtics thought. Go ahead, Christian.
How you doing, Felga? Listen, I moved off Anthony Davis. I want to talk about the Red Sox. Is that right?
Huh? You want to talk about who?
It's in the Red Sox.
Okay, go ahead.
Listen, I completely disagree with you taking Hanley off this team. It's going to cost us a World Series. You want Mitchie Moreland playing for us instead?
Yes.
Come on, Felga.
I do.
Come on. How? Give me one reason.
Because I think Mitch Moreland cares. He's not going to be out to lunch. He's not going to bail on you. He's not going to fake injuries.
Listen.
He's not going to do any of the things that I worry about Hanley doing on a daily basis.
Listen, I see Hanley Ramirez in the dugout, dancing, shaking his behind, everybody laughing. That's a good guy to have around.
You have no idea.
I don't see Mitch doing that.
We have no idea. We have no idea how Hanley is to have around. But let's say he's fine. I also know I can't rely on him. He's here 4 years. He had one good year. And he refused to work on his outfield. Screwed around with the first base thing. He had only 1 year where he was there every day and productive and focused, and that was the year David Ortiz got in his face because it was his last year. Other than that, have you been able to rely on Hanley Ramirez?
In the playoffs, you have.
He's put up good playoff numbers.
He's a career 380 hitter in the postseason. He had 571 last year.
If the Sox get to the playoffs, don't win and don't hit, you can bring that back up to me, and you'll have a case. Until then, any team that doesn't have Hanley Ramirez, I think, has a better chance for success. That's
so, again, but you know my real reason. I just don't like the practice of the Red Sox releasing guys because they don't want to pay them. But, you know, like, that bugs me. So, and that's why they did this. This wasn't a baseball reason. And it's not even the reasons you're talking about, which is a culture reason. And I don't disagree with the assessment of him from a culture standpoint. Hanley was a pain in the ass. He was a dog. He played when he wanted to play, but in the playoffs, he usually wanted to play.
Because he's an elite talent.
Oh, he's ridiculous at the plate.
But, you know, those elite talents that just turn on when they want to, you know, because when they feel like it, I can't stand those
sure,
guys.
Sure, frustrating.
He's baseball Rondo. He's at his best when the lights are brightest. And you see he's got the talent. It's just so frustrating to see. I just feel like it's a little short-sighted with Pedroia out right now. Like, they could have done it a month from now. And sure, he'd be more pissed because that would mean he'd have more plate appearances and that'd be closer to that vesting option. But it just feels like more than ever it was about the money.
See, they which is why they did it when they did, because they knew if they waited, he might start hitting again. So they dumped him when they could.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with Pedroia. Just give me the first opportunity that made half sense, that they could make some sort of case that we're not dumping him for the vesting option, they dumped him. So, and I have no problem with it. Long commercial-free segment is next.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Jessica, if the season ended today, who do you like? Who is the best team in baseball for you right now?
Red Sox.
Why?
I like the way that they, honestly, the way they play their offense. And I don't know. My eyes go to offense. I know that it's a day and age of bullpens and pitching, but this offense, you look when Mookie Betts is healthy. I know you said today, but Mookie's coming back soon, so I'll take that. Who's yours?
Oh, boy. Boy, you put me in a tough spot. I like asking
you
the question.
You asked me.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Again, these two. You know who has bigger balls? Jess Mendoza or A-Rod? Jess! Jess at least answered the question. I didn't love her explanation. She like, who's the best team in baseball? She says the Red Sox. I love the way they play D. Huh? Like, their infield defense blows. I don't know where they rank statistically. Are they good? Are they a good statistical defense?
Oh, I can't imagine.
I mean, their infield defense, their outfield defense can be great.
Yeah,
I mean,
their outfield defense is good.
But their infield defense? But
Devers, Nunez, those guys are liabilities. Oh, like, Butchers.
And Bogarts is just average.
Oh, no, please. Chopping up ground meat on the left side of the infield, for crying out loud.
But at least Jess, who has a pair, answered the question. A-Rod's like, oh, that's a tough question, Jess. And then he does answer. It takes about 5 minutes. I don't even need to play it for you. But he fumbles around and they grab ass around. He says, well, you'd have to lean to the Astros with everything that they've done and the way that they're playing. But if you want to talk about the most talent, it's the Yankees. So that was A-Rod's answer. But Jess says, the Red Sox, Maz. Is that unfair of Jess?
No. I mean, she can have whatever opinion she wants if she wants to be wrong.
Are the Red Sox the best team in baseball?
No.
And you say it so dismissively. They have the best record in baseball.
Houston's the best team in the game. If I were to bet on someone right now, I'd bet on Houston.
Okay, and the Red Sox just went toe-to-toe with them, and that means nothing to
you. You keep saying this toe-to-toe
thing. They did. They played them to a draw. So why are the Red Sox not on the Astros level?
Because, again, I'm not sure the Astros are as motivated to win a regular season series in June as the Red Sox should be. That's all. Houston won last year. You think they got geeked up for this series the way the Red Sox did? You think they looked at it and said, ooh, Boston's coming in here.
They pitched their best guys. And Keuchel's not one of their best guys this year, by the way.
Okay, so but they played four games. They were going to get three of them no matter what.
What was Verlander's ERA going into that game?
1.11.
And the Red Sox beat him?
Yes, Saturday.
So what, Verlander didn't want it?
No, Saturday win was a good win. It was. It was an excellent win. The best win of the year.
So they went toe-to-toe with the best team in baseball.
Yeah, after blowing the first two games. So again, I'm not telling you they had a bad weekend. I'm just not telling you they had a good one. And they went 2-2. And if we're going to compare and contrast, the Yankees went in there for four games and won three of them.
Seems a bit unfair, Maz. Saturday morning after that sale start and then Joe Kelly puking all over himself in the eighth inning of Friday night, I was like, you know what? They're frauds. They're not on this team's level. To do what they did the next couple of games without Mookie Betts, like, that's impressive.
Pretty good.
The Saturday game was a good win. It was the best win of the year.
And then they validated and followed up with another one, got out of there 2-2, and went toe-to-toe with the best team in baseball. That happened. I'm sorry.
And by the way, they didn't beat Justin Verlander. They beat something named Will Harris and the rest of the bullpen.
Yeah, Will Harris. That's correct. They beat Will Harris in the seventh inning.
But Verlander shut them down.
But that aside,
he only lasted six innings, I think, right?
Yeah, he did. He went six, and they got to Harris in the seventh. Yeah.
Okay, but they knocked him out of there.
Totally.
I wouldn't use the term knocked him out of there.
Well, they ran up his pitch totals. I mean, you know, I don't know what.
No, now we're just parsing words. They beat.
That's what we do on Sports Talk Radio, Michael.
I'm not disputing the Saturday game. The Saturday game was a good win. It meant something. It meant something for Price to hang in there after falling down 3-1 and to give him a shot. I think he retired the last 11 guys. More importantly, I liked the way Price threw. I thought he was aggressive. He was attacking guys. He was coming in on right-handed hitters. You know, he didn't walk anybody. Price looked to me like he wasn't afraid on Saturday, which I'm happy to see. But overall, I take the whole series in an aggregate. And they went 2-2. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great. So I'm not going to sit here and all of a sudden pat them on the back for something they didn't do.
Gary in Rhode Island, what's your Red Sox thought?
Yeah, it's time for the – hey, guys. It's time for the Sox to tell Bedroia he's all done. Look, how do I know that? I have two knee replacements, and I spent 10 years trying everything under the sun not to have to do it. Once that knee is damaged, it's never the same.
Let's get to that point with Bedroia. But they don't – I mean, so there's a long-term issue at second base. No question about it. This year is Eduardo Nunez enough?
No. I mean, now look, Holt's playing great. I told you, I'd have released Brock Holt a long time ago. So maybe Holt ends up being some kind of solution for them. Although I would argue that the more he plays, the worse he's going to get. I think you get the same out of Su Wayne Lin, for crying out loud, that you get out of Brock Holt. So second base, yes, something to keep an eye on. The Pedroia thing, that's chronic. And you brought this up at the end of the week. I don't think it's unreasonable to look at Pedroia and wonder if his, you know, time as a regular is over.
Peter and JP on LeBron James. Yes, Peter.
How you doing?
Good.
Couple weeks ago, maybe three, 4 weeks ago, Antoine Walker said the best destination for LeBron James is Boston. Okay? So I've been thinking about it, and he loves Brad Stevens. He loves coming into Boston and looking at the banners. I mean, he hugged Jason Tatum for like half an hour. That was kind of weird. But
All right, so Peter, you know, I mean, let me just cut to the chase because people have started to float this. Others have floated this. If we want to play the game, I don't think it's realistic, but I'll play the game. This is talk radio. This is what we do, right, Jimmy?
Sure.
For you to bring in LeBron James, he's a free agent, so you don't need to trade anybody, but you're going to need cap room. So just to make it easy, you're going to have to deal off a max player to bring in LeBron James. LeBron James and Kyrie Irving hate each other. They're not going to play together. So here's the equation. Would you deal off Kyrie Irving for draft picks or whatever just to create the space to bring in LeBron James? Would you do that?
100 out of 100 times. And the other thing, you're not listening. No, you are listening. But LeBron James's net worth is $500 million. So I don't think, you know.
Okay, he'll take less. He's not going to take minimum salary. You're going to have to. But, if you want to just take out the money, Peter, LeBron and Kyrie won't play with each other. Or at least Kyrie won't play with LeBron. I think that's clear. All right, so that would be a hell of a porking of Kyrie Irving to bring him here and then sign LeBron as a free agent the next year. Like Kyrie's running from the guy. All right, so let's just be realistic. The whole thing's unrealistic, but if you want to dream about it, Kyrie's got to go. So would you deal off Kyrie Irving if it meant you could have LeBron James for the next 3 to 5 years?
No.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
A guaranteed title, and more importantly, you would see people's heads explode.
Oh, this green team, what would they do?
I hate LeBron, but now he's on the Celtics.
Yeah, well, we can retire his banner. Because it's another number. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, banner 23.
Here it comes.
So my reasons are different. Like, I don't care. You know what I mean? You love LeBron, hate LeBron, I don't care. I'm interested in players and programs. That's what I'm interested in. Kyrie's 26. LeBron's what, 33? He's going to be 34 at the end of the year, I think. That's a big gap.
When you say end of the year?
December. I think his birthday's in December.
Okay, so he starts next year at 33. That's good to know.
Okay. So all I would say is that, no. I like the longer window with the guys you have. And the other thing is, based on experience, like the idea that people who think Brad Stevens is his great coach would want LeBron blows me away. You can't coach the same way with LeBron. LeBron runs the show if he shows up.
You're saying Brad Stevens would not want LeBron?
No. I'm saying the fans who love Brad Stevens and want LeBron, I don't get.
Oh, I see.
Because you sit here and say, Stevens is such a great coach. He's built a culture. Look at how they play. They pass the ball around, interchangeable parts.
So you don't think LeBron could come in and fit into that?
No, I don't. I don't. I think LeBron is an egomaniac who has to be the centerpiece of everything.
That's an even better twist. Now I need it to happen.
Okay, so Murray, from a story standpoint, of course. I'm just telling you, from a basketball standpoint, I'm not giving up a 26-year-old Kyrie Irving for a 34-year-old
with
LeBron
a gimpy
James.
Knee.
So
no
I am, way. I am because I don't trust Kyrie's niece.
I don't trust Kyrie staying here long term either, by the way.
So is there a growing rumble on this? I was listening to the morning guys this morning. And
Gorman.
Did Gorman say something somewhere?
He did.
What did he say?
It was some podcast that he did, and he, you know, this is the same guy that's saying like he wouldn't trade any of these like bum players here, and he said he like I'm paraphrasing, but it sounded like he wouldn't be shocked if Kyrie left after next year.
This is about a 52-second cut.
Okay, so he hedged on Kyrie's future here. Anyway, here's Mike Gorman from a podcast.
I don't have any reason to have any long-term injury concern with Gordon Hayward. I think Kyrie's record over the course of his career would tell you that injuries have been a problem. I think you have to be smart here and look at what the facts are and understand that maybe they may be a problem going forward, too. But Gordon Hayward hasn't given any indication in the past that he's injury jinxed by any way, shape, or form. Kyrie, on the other hand, does have a history of injuries, and you know you'd like to see Kyrie. Hopefully, it's in a contract year, which he's in next year, to have just a season of his career. Again, I think the big measurement for Kyrie going forward is how many games can you reasonably expect out of him.
Do you expect Kyrie to be here long term, or do you think next year is his last year?
I don't think it's a given either way.
Okay. So by Mike Gorman and Green Teamer standards, that is, he's dumped all over Kyrie. I'm joking. But, you know, Kyrie's an injury concern, and there's no guarantee either way.
There was an article a few years ago in ESPN that said Kyrie Irving gets bored in locations.
Well,
I find that stunning to hear that from Mike Gorman, that last part. Wouldn't know either way. Like, I don't know. I feel like even just as, like, the king.
I don't think it's a given either way.
That's stunning to me.
That is stunning.
Like, he usually will toe the company line in those type of things. Like, no, don't worry about it. Kyrie's going to be here.
That's a borderline green bombshell.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a wink-wink with Kyrie. As long as we're good, we get Hayward in here, we get you, we have a good team, you know, Kyrie's going to want to stay. I'm not worried about Kyrie leaving yet.
Yet. Okay.
It's the other thing, I mean, his contract could be complicated, though. I'll say that, given his history of injuries. And
you bet.
Do you really want him out there 80 games a year? Because I don't.
And I'm just saying, eventually something's going to have to give. You can't have four max guys. If Tatum and Brown, and maybe Brown's not a max guy, but you want him to be. You want him to be that good. So if he's a Kawhi Leonard, he's going to be a max guy. Tatum, Brown, Horford should be gone, but Irving, Hayward, you're not going to have four or five max contracts. Something's going to give eventually here. So I don't know. Just keep it all in mind. It's a reentry Monday. This is on the table. NBA Finals. Red Sox go to toe-to-toe with the best team in baseball. Maz is not impressed. And the latest on Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski. Right after Murray's 90-second update, no commercial.
You're listening to Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.